Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to awaken to the truth of your soul? Welcome to today's episode of the Nadia Khalil Morning Show with your host, Nadia Khalil.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to today's show. Today is Wednesday already, Relationship Wednesday. Da-da-da-da. It is the 20th of September already. It's 5:30 in the morning in L.A., and it's nice and, like, it's cold. It's like chilly mornings. We actually have a fall going on here. So we got to get our prayers ready again. We got more hurricanes coming, and, gosh, I thought it was over with, and it turns out there's, like, two more just rolling around, and, man, what a season for that part of our country. So just send out prayers because they're going to need it. Today's show, what three things keep relationships thriving? Now, there's like so many five things, six things, 11 things, seven things, but this is three. And if you listen to this show regularly, you're going to not really laugh at what they are, but you're going to kind of know. And you can guess, you can throw it in the chat if you want, but it's one of those things that I guess Christ just said over and over again when I first saw him. It was just like this redundancy, but I kept thinking that what more could I write about these things? What more could I write about these things? And I would sit down and it would write itself and I would be done and go, wow, I can't believe there's more. There was more. And when he said to me, that we already know what we need to know. We will just know it in greater depth. It's not like there's like a million things we need to know in life. There's actually only three. And those three things is what we all come hardwired with. And when one of those things is pierced, we spend our lives trying to fill that hole. We try to take care of that, heal that, work on it. We're like almost like our antennas up. If somebody else has a problem with it, we even gravitate to them like, oh, wow, you too. Maybe we can get through this together. It reminds me over and over again that all this complication and whirlwind in this matrix, that matrix, you know, everything you want to do, even your health insurance, one call will take you an hour because all the rules, all the laws, all the stuff. You get a parking ticket, how long it takes you to get that taken care of. Now with the internet, they'll let you just pay, but if you pay, you don't get to have a voice. It's just these matrixes, and you have to have time to get to everything. Can't just sit and pay your bills. It takes you half a day to pay your bills and all the different dates and this late payment and this interest and this, that, and you're trying to figure everything out. But we all boil down to three things, whether it's in our relationships or anywhere else in our life. And we all know what the key is to keep relationships alive and growing. Yet why do we do the things that don't? Because that basis for every relationship, the habits that couples have and keep, are what keep their relationships thriving. So what makes us do the stuff that doesn't keep our relationships thriving? Because we forget that what we do every day with each other is what keeps us going. It keeps including us or excluding us from the very relationships we're in. People who they're the ones doing the thing, and then they're blaming the other person for their reaction to top it off because they really can't see the other person's point of view. And the other person who's with someone like that feels exposed all the time. They're the hardest relationships to be in and to stay in when one partner can't see the other. But between every couple, every relationship you have in your life, there's a third energy that swirls around you that is the combination of the two of you, and it's an energy all itself. And that energy can only be fed or starved through the couple. It's like when you try to explain to people your routine, but you can tell them what you do, but how it feels and the energy that it feeds both of you with is usually only known by the two of you. And when they say there's his side, her side, and the truth, or their side and the truth, it's because the truth is the facts. Okay, this is what happened, this is where they went, this is what they said. But then how somebody feels, that's another story, because how you feel is how you take in what you hear. It's how you take in what you hear. And what you think you heard is what you respond to. And at times we might think somebody says something to us that they didn't mean the way we thought they did, but we snap back. And they're like, wow, whoa, what was that for? Well, you just said, well, not really. That's not what I said. That's not even how I said it. But because they have fear, doubt, worry, control, or guilt in their mind, they're worried you're going to get something from them. And they start playing these games that they don't need to play, but they isolate their partner. So what happens is when they want their partner to be how they want them to be, they don't realize that their behavior pushed the person away, and then they wonder why the person isn't close, and now they get more fear, doubt, worry, control, or guilt. And there's an antidote. I love saying this because I kind of raised, you know, my son this way, because there's like OCD, and then the antidote was DCO. But we just turned it around and we gave it a name. But the antidote for keeping the bond strong, not running away, facing what's there, is truth, love, and purity. Those three things, not only did Christ talk about from the beginning, but he continued to talk about it and continued in 15 years later, as though you could run out of any topic, I'm still writing about truth, love, and purity. Every single one of us stems from truth, love, and purity. We are hardwired to it, and when something's off coming towards it, our antennas go up to protect it. Can't protect it and we're exposed. That's when we argue, because now we're fighting for it. When it's been wronged or somebody's on their way to injuring you in that way, it's one of the most critical parts of our mind and our bodies and our souls to understand. If we don't understand truth, love, and purity, we don't understand ourselves. Christ started with self-accounting, because when I saw Christ talking about truth, love, and purity, wasn't something we knew, thought about, cared about, saw. We just didn't know what we didn't know. But then everything that he was asking me, everything I was writing, even when I'd see him, I would feel that, but I didn't have words for it. And that's emulated when we meet people, when we build relationships with them. Our truth, love, and purity, like they go, they get so high, we don't even know what to do. It feels like we're right at home. And the reason we feel right at home is because that's who we originally are. When Christ told me you're going to be a teacher of origination, the original nation, the original people we were. But I didn't like using that word because I didn't think anyone knew it, but there's a lot of words people don't know. But we learn them and we grow. So when your truth and your love and your purity finds a home that you can share that with another person, that bond that the two of you have cannot be broken. That is the strongest bond we can ever have with another person while we are alive on earth. That's the bond that when a woman has a child or a couple has a child together, that's the bond they have with their child. And that is why that bond cannot be broken. So when you have a relationship and you both understand truth and you both understand love and you both understand purity together, you know what you're talking about. You know that wherever that person is in the world, they remain connected to you. Conflict that might come up between the two of you, you both know you will solve it. When truth and love and purity is not present, every conflict is a deal breaker. Oh, one more time and I'm gone. You start hearing the verbiage that follows the deal breaker stuff. How could you do that to us? Because when you're taking someone in that you trust more than anyone else in the world, it's your partner, and they violate love or truth or purity, there's nowhere to go with it but conflict. And that conflict causes a lot of other like ripple effects of that behavior. You go to either to counseling or you're fighting all the time or you start involving your friends. You start talking bad about them to other people. You roll your eyes when someone brings out your partner's name. Because that bond isn't there. People underestimate how powerful we have the capability of being with other people if we can just be truthful. If we don't attack how they feel about themselves when it comes to loving themselves. There's never anything good to come out of putting someone down. There is never anything good to come out of somebody lying. And I have worked with couples who I know love each other, but one of them just lies about the dumbest things, things you don't even need to lie about. And yet, for some reason, they're elements of self-sabotage. They're elements of fear. They're elements of doubt. They're elements of worry that live inside of them. They're more comfortable lying than they are telling the truth. Continues to bring up conflict in the relationship. It continues to bog them down, bring them down. Every time I see them, it's another incident of the same thing. It is exhausting to hear. I asked them once, can I tape record this live conversation? I want to tape record it. Because if I do, before you leave, we will leave 15 minutes at the end to listen to it together. And I have to say that when they listened back to their conversation, and I didn't even say I'm recording now or not, I just did it on my phone so that I just got like the thick of it. They could not believe that was them. It was like I took a bucket of cold water and threw it at them. Wow, is that what we sound like? We sound like little kids. I said, you're behaving like little kids, not because you want to, but because the issues you each individually have and the issues that you're bringing to the table to deal with each other is still like a little kid trying to figure out if their parents love them or not. You haven't established that the two of you love each other and are going to make it no matter what. Because parts of you doesn't deserve the feeling of making it or being loved. So you create these obstacles to keep reproving that, and that renewal of that feeling of reproving love. That feeling is what you're after. So you create these scenarios and these whirlwinds. Can't feel it otherwise. And you do this to each other. And when you do this to each other, that's when you think you're thriving. Like, wow, he paid attention to the argument. Well, he wasn't paying attention to me before that. And then it boils down to, you know what? I really do love you. Why are we fighting like this? Well, we're fighting like this because I don't feel worth love. So when you say it like that, instead of what the argument is, you have something to deal with, something to work with. So now let's say, fast forward, they fall into that pattern again, and one of them says to the other one, hey, wait, before we start tearing each other apart. I love you. How do we want to solve this? Because I found out some couples are addicted to the fight part. It's all they know. It's the only way they feel loved. So if you say that at the beginning, you don't need to tear each other apart. Don't. It almost like shuts it down before it gets started. But until they heard themselves and the routine, it was like they did it so much, they had a routine of how they started. It started off quiet. And it started off with one not wanting to say what it was. And then the other one would like, come on, you know, let's just get it over with. Well, it's when you did this, or when you said this, or when we went here, or when we saw Jane, or whatever it was. And then they just went at it. Their routine was set. They went in, and they knew how to come out. But by the time they came out, they were exhausted. They were both hurt because now it's like, wow, I'm not safe at all. You've picked up on anything and everything I've done. And you're throwing it at me. And you're blaming me. And somehow in there, you forgot that you were there too, and you don't blame yourself. So now I don't feel like I'm worthy of your love. I feel like I've disappointed you. Because that's the aftermath. The aftermath is that disappointment, is that feeling. So what happens in the aftermath when the object is to let the other person continuously know how hurt you are? Is that you've just put your entire level of happiness onto them. That pressure now is theirs. So now they're not only responsible for their happiness, they are also responsible for your happiness. That's a lot to put on someone. We forget, and this is something when I saw Christ that just stays in my mind, that when we leave this earth and we stand before God and we do the whole thing. We end up seeing our lives and we're learning. We're building the evolution of why we came. So we go through that whole thing. We don't stand there and say, I did this because of so-and-so, or this person did that to me. God just says, why did you do that? And you just say, I did this. This is what I needed from it. Because it's almost like when you're in front of God, like a truth serum. It's like when Christ took me back that night and I got to see. I didn't see anybody else. I wasn't asked about anybody else. I wasn't responsible for anybody else. I was responsible for why I came. Because that's why I came, was to evolve my soul in a way that I made a decision to come and do. And then the effects of our behavior, we've seen the ripple effect of how far-reaching our behavior goes, how it travels from one person to another, and how we're all connected, all that's seen. So when we say, you know, we are all one, we are truly, if you took one mind and broke it up into billions of pieces, that's us. We're all the same, we're all different, and we're all the same again. So when you're in a relationship with somebody, ultimately, you are the same. But you have to be different, whether it's a physical gender, or it's talent, or it's where you're from, or whatever it is, your religion, your work, whatever it is that is different. But then you're all the same again. We all have the same needs. We just have different levels of them, and no two humans born before us or will be born after us will be the same combination. That's how intricate and how interesting and how awesome we are. That part alone, is what drives us while we're here. It's what wakes us up when we wake up. It's what sleeps our body when we sleep. It's what does the work we do. It's also the part when injured that we procrastinate. And a lot of time, and I loved this one because it really made me see procrastination as something else. But when we're doing something that doesn't excite us, even though we know it's good for us, but it doesn't excite us, we're going to put it off. But it also lets you know what you are excited about. What do you get up and do without even thinking is who you really are. In the beginning, when I saw Christ and I was with couples, on an individual note between them, one or the two of them might say, we don't actually know who we are as a couple. He's never home. I'm always working. The kids are little, that, you know, by the time he gets home, I'm too tired. I feel like nobody realizes how much work I do all day, but this is harder than my 9 to 5. And then they have to, like, reappreciate each other. And we hear about these things, but until you do it, you really don't know. It's unbelievable how fast that happens. Here's a couple, and they're together, and then, you know, they get pregnant, she gets pregnant, and they're excited, and they're romanticizing. But boy, once that baby comes, you are now parents. Whether you know how to be or not, you're parents. And life has just changed. And our world doesn't accommodate for that time. We don't have time for that love, for our relationships, for our friendships. So now we feel pressure instead of happiness. If a woman gets to stay home and raise her own child, that's not what is the norm in our world anymore. And the younger people are reflecting that, the millennials, because they're waiting to have children. Out of my daughter's high school, and she's 27 years old, I think only a handful, and I'm saying maybe 10 or more, got married already, and they're 27 years old. That's it. That is it. And out of those 10, how many had children? 2. So far. They're still, in their minds, they just got out of college and they're establishing themselves. I waited. I was a later person because I moved and I still had school and I still had to do things. I had my kids at 27 was number one. My friends are grandmothers. They had kids in their early 20s. My mom, that was when women had kids at 17, 18, 19. My grandmother was when they had kids at 14, 15, and 16. My mom and my grandmother were 14 years apart. My mom and her sister were 17 years apart. That's how we have evolved. That's how the world has changed. But the millennials also know that they need to find someone they fit with intrinsically, the soft things. They get, well, okay, I have so many choices. We have choices of gender. We have choices of style. We have choices of sexuality. We have choices of how we want to live, where we want to live, why we want to live that way. What kind of industry does this person work in? Because it tells you what your life is going to be like. They decide all that before walking in the door. And they know if they have a child, they have to find child care. How could one of them stay home? So they don't know how to solve that issue yet. So they don't have them yet. It will cost them as much money to take care of that child as it will to work to pay for it. So do one of them stay home? And can they afford to? Because what if now that child grows up, you lose those years in your profession? How do you catch up? They have all these things to think about. But they do know that if love is intact between them, the truth is intact between them, and the purity and the innocence of life is something they can draw from each other, that they can make it as a couple. And it might take them till 30 to have a first child in this time, or 31, or 32, or 35. Freezing people's eggs is something people talk about now in their age, believe it or not, because they know they can't do it at the time when they want to do it, when their bodies are ready to do it. So they're looking at love and truth and purity as the only foundation that they can build a relationship on before they can build anything else. Because we are instinctive to that, to truth and love and purity. When it's there, we can stay. When it's not there, we don't know how to stay. And I love when Christ says things like, doesn't mean anybody's good or bad or right or wrong. But if the combination of two people isn't the combination that can keep them together, we all know. When we go against knowing that and we try to take a round hole and stick it into a square peg, or a square turning it into a round hole or something like that, in time it will tell us this isn't forever. Again, never means that someone is good or bad. It's just that when those three things can't settle between a couple, there is no couple. There's frustration, but there is no couple. Truth, love, and purity just live on. That's who we are. You guys, I already have to go. I love you so very much. Tomorrow is Dream Theme Thursday. Don't forget it. I'm already getting dreams in. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to today's Daily Dose of the Nadia.